This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
Ground ball to Gleyber Torres, and that'll do it. A no-hitter for Corey Kluber.
So much fun to be a small part of and be on the team to see Corey go out there and spin that.
I mean, this is a guy who's won multiple Cy Youngs. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Well-played game, and it was fun to be a part of.
It's a hell of an accomplishment.
We celebrate Corey Kluber and a masterful performance.
This is DCR.
Up next, to a Clayton.
Remix.
Yes. On 98.7 ESPN.
How you like me now?
All right, DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. I don't understand why. You hear when I have the fumble there of Clayton Kershaw? Rick, I have not heard you happier on the first 99 days of the show than at that very moment. Why does it give you such satisfaction for my failure?
Because it rarely happens.
It's not
true. You
play,
every time I make a mistake, I mean, you're quick to it.
This is a 20-year-old Detroit woman.
Exactly.
You should have heard Santiago defending you, by the way, at the break. Oh, I could see how he could make that mistake.
Well, because he does. I mean, he does, because he's the other one that does an observation sometimes. He does DHIF, and sometimes you can't help it.
How are we defending that? You're trying to make us guess whether it happened in Florida or not, and the first thing you say is this is a 20-year-old Detroit woman, and now we're going to defend you?
Do you ever read these type of articles where they mention over and over the city and state where it happens, and
you have to make sure you don't say that when you give the information.
But you're putting so much focus on not trying to say it the other 15 times it's mentioned in the article, and sometimes you miss the obvious one at the beginning. It happens.
Only you would defend them here.
Maybe it was vacation. Honestly, maybe it happened on vacation.
You strategically placed it there to see if we were really paying close attention to you. That I would respect.
Which I wasn't. You're right. I screwed it up. I completely knew from the beginning, too. I didn't even get through the story. It's not like I dropped it in like midway through the story.
No, that was like you started opening the story with a 20-year-old Detroit woman.
Yeah, but why do you have to say the article every 2 seconds? It's the Detroit woman. You can't have every
why
single
can't
time you
avoid
gotta say that?
That. Like, you know that reading it, you can't mention the Detroit woman.
Listen, in the moment when I'm going over it in my head, what I'm going to say, that sounds great. And I don't say Detroit woman until all of a sudden I have to do it. Occasionally I screw up.
That's all right. Nobody's perfect.
Now, we know that.
We just realized when you stumbled with saying Corey Kluber.
I stumbled on Kluber as well?
No, you were Clayton Kershaw.
Kershaw. That's what I'm
saying. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it was tough to tell what it was.
Another exactly. one that I'm going to hear next, later. Next, Clayton.
Clayton.
Clayton. The Clayton.
It's a great name, Clayton.
The Clayton.
Up next, what Clayton. Of course, RJ's got it ready to go.
Gerrit Cole leads the Yankees to another win. We know he's. Let me do that again. And don't make that a drop, please. Because I know.
It's great.
That's not even on air now. He's bringing
pitches
that stuff
are dicey
back.
For Rothenberg. Anytime we start talking about starting pitchers, Dave
Rothenberg.
All right,
quick break. Jay Williams on the other side. I rarely do it. I can barely speak. Not an Amazon Prime member. Don't worry. Great. Can we get the Higashioka, please? Can I get something that somebody
Kyle
else Higashioka. Says
it's not right? Kyle Higashioka.
And you can only find him on FanDuel. Just stopped in the middle of the read.
But I don't know why these are funny.
Just stopped in the middle of the read.
Sometimes you just need
we're
to
supposed
take a break.
To be professionals, Dave. That's why it's funny. We're
no,
supposed
we're
to
talking
be.
For 3 nonstop hours. We're going to have mistakes during the course of the show. But how come every one of mine sounds like I'm having a stroke?
Eligibility restrictions do apply.
Oh, man.
All right. Can we hear from – now I got to be very careful to enunciate properly. Can we hear from Aaron Boone on the Corey Kluber no-hitter from last night. Why do you think there are so many no-hitters going on this season?
There's a lot of great pitchers right now. Pitching is really good. I think pitchers more than ever, you know, based on information, know exactly what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. I think they're outfitted with the absolute right repertoire for their skill set. So you don't have a lot of guys going out there throwing pitches that they probably shouldn't throw because you can analyze everything so much. You're able to, you know, make little adjustments and learn things in real time almost with, you know, how the ball spins and how, what you should be doing a little different or whatever. And then I think the game plans are a lot more spot on than ever, probably.
He'll say anything but the truth, huh?
Well, I think what he said, I mean, there's a lot of truth to what he said.
Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, I listen, pitching right now is dominating hitting. You can't argue that.
I'm not denying that, but no, you think it's because they're game planning differently than they did the last couple of years?
No, I think that's part of it.
More information now, Dave.
But I think it's all of it. It's the how you line the defense up. I think it's how you pitch the guys. I think it's knowing how much the ability to put, you know, crazy spin on the ball now, your spin rates and all that stuff.
I would like to eliminate the shift. That's what I would like to do. Eliminate the shift. You have to have two guys on each side of second base.
I don't disagree with that. I don't. I mean, that would definitely get more action.
It's awful. Watching three guys on the right side of second base and then, like, the third baseman's playing over second. It's terrible.
I mean, you watched the Mets game yesterday. I mean, their defensive alignment was almost perfect. Like, yeah, the one play, I mean, Lindor's playing, like, way in the hole at shortstop. The ball gets hit direct. Didn't have to move his feet.
Mm-hmm.
No, just directly at him. Or, I mean, you hit a line drive straight up the middle, and you get the...
And the guy's right there?
Guy's standing right
there
behind
the base. Those are always wild, because the second the ball's hit, you're like, oh, there's a base hit. No, there's not.
Yeah, but again, I mean, you're trying to... Here's where I understand it. Is it boring for the fan? Yeah, it's boring for the fan. But, I mean, with the amount of money involved and everything else, everyone's trying to win as many games as possible. I mean, this is... We're trying to get 27 outs. And if I can position my defense to give me the best opportunity to get those 27 outs...
I don't blame the teams. I don't blame the coaches. I don't blame the players. I blame baseball. Listen, you can't have a guy in the paint for 3 seconds defensively anymore. The NBA realized that that's a mistake, and it's not good for the game, and if you do it, you're going to get penalized. Well, you know what? Let's do the same thing with the shift. The shift is not good for the baseball fan.
Yeah. But time out. I mean, basketball is on the verge of dealing with the same thing baseball is dealing with now, with threes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's almost becoming too much. It's too many.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, I mean, you're watching... I mean, you got a 3-on-1 fast break. I forget what the team was.
And they're pulling up. And they're pulling up from 30 feet.
And they're pulling up from three.
Yeah.
They're running to the 3-point line.
But here's the one difference I will say, though, Rico. With basketball, there's constant action. Like, there's constant movement. With baseball, you don't have that. I mean, and a lot of times, even with the shift, I mean, you're talking about home runs or strikeouts. Like, hitters are saying it's not their job to hit away from the shift. It's their job to hit over the shift. And so when you start talking about the fundamental issue, it's incentivizing home runs and not, I guess, penalizing guys for striking out a bunch. I mean, because, I mean, that's the direction that teams want to go in. They feel like based on the numbers, that gives them the best chance to compete while also keeping the payroll at a certain level that makes it comfortable for owners. And at some point, something about that has to change. My only thing is, have we gotten so far down the road where it's going to be hard for Major League Baseball to put the genie back in the bottle?
It might be. I heard Bart Scott say, and I think it was yesterday on the show. Might have been the day before, but I'm pretty sure it was yesterday. And he said, you know, they have these shifts. Just go the other way. Just like, you know, just simply go the other way. And I'm thinking, they can't.
No,
like,
they can't.
Ichiro can do it. There's the occasional guy that can do it. But if they could do it, they would do it. They can't.
Well, time out, though. I mean, there are guys that would...
That are good enough hitters that if you paid them to do it, they could figure it out.
But not enough guys can do that.
Well, they don't, to Chris's point, they're not paying you to do that. They're paying you to hit home runs. The more home runs I hit, the more money I get paid. Like, I mean, how many times did we have, you know, Tex on the show or he's on with Kay and they asked him that question? Like, why just go the opposite way? Once you get two strikes, now all of a sudden hit away from the shift. No, I hit over the shift or I hit home runs. That's how I do it. That's his mindset. Gary Sheffield was asked that question. And he said, I could do what Ichiro does and hit a bunch of singles, but that's not what they pay me to do. I get paid to hit home runs. That's how you make the most money.
I get it, but you're telling me two strikes, big spot, you can't, if you can do it, you shouldn't do it? go the other way. Keep the
I'm not saying
going.
I wouldn't do it.
Get on base.
That's how I like watching baseball. That's how I enjoy watching baseball. I never looked at a strikeout as a good thing. Like, it was embarrassing to strike out to me.
Our guys don't care.
They don't care at all. And you're at a point, too, with pitching. I mean, the ball, spin rates, are they putting, you know, foreign substances on the ball? Whatever it ends up being that's allowing the ball to move the way it's moving with the amount of velocity that it has. You take that and you couple it with the fact that you're not seeing a pitcher for the most part, you know, three times.
No, rarely if ever.
And then
rarely
all of a sudden you get into a bullpen, like just when you're starting to feel comfortable with who you're seeing,
and everybody
you get into
throws
a bullpen,
98.
Guys throw 98, but it's from all different arm angles.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's hitting is not easy.
Darren O'Day is coming from Chapman. I mean, yeah, it's filthy stuff. RJ and Raymond are the best in the business. So you mentioned Teixeira. They go through 6 years of files. 6 years they scroll through. They go back to 2015 on the K Show, Mark Teixeira talking about trying to beat the shift in baseball.
Well, I told you guys multiple times, I said it over the last few years, that the way to beat the shift is hit more home runs, doubles, and walk more.
So, there you have it. That's
all
how you
fun
beat
stuff.
The shift.
All fun stuff.
It's all great for the person watching at home. It's
yeah,
awesome.
let's hit home runs that people are kind of like all set with. Or let's walk and then not steal. Let's get on first base
go
and just
station
stand
to
there.
Station.
Yeah, still, well, no, you don't want to go. They don't even want to go station to station. They want
no,
to.
No, they want to get
it's
on.
It's almost
and
like
hit
little
a home
league,
run.
Right? Just stand on the base until there's contact.
Yeah, they're like, why would we train? Why would we train to run the bases when in actuality the nerds don't want us running the bases? Either we trot because we hit a home run, or we walk to first, and then we can trot when the next guy behind us hits a home run, hits a two-run homer.
Who needs hamstrings to do that?
Exactly right. Who needs hamstrings? I don't need them. Right. You keep them.
Yeah, you take them. Ipso facto, there you go.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
If we get another no-hitter thrown this week, like at what point are you just turned off by the no-hitter? Or does that not happen?
I wouldn't say turned off by the no-hitter.
It loses its luster, though,
it
right?
would lose some of its luster, correct. That's where it's headed, it feels like. We've already got six. We had no hitters in back-to-back days. We're not just the one saying that. I mean, Clayton Kershaw said it.
Right. One of the best pitchers in the last 50 years of baseball is turned off by the direction that baseball is headed right now.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's at a certain point, I mean, it's not good for baseball because now all of a sudden it's like, it's almost like you're making it look so routine that it's now easy. It shouldn't be that easy.
No. 55 home runs should not just happen. No hitter six times in a season that's not 2 months old should not just happen. It's too frequent right now.
And the reason why it's too frequent is because of the approach of today's hitters. Guys are focused on launch angle. Guys are trying to hit home runs. They want to hit the ball over the fence because that's what teams are paying them to do. Like, I mean, the guys that have the high batting averages, I mean, outside of DJ LeMahieu, not a whole lot of those guys are getting paid big money. It's just not. That's not what today's game is. So, I mean, that opens the door for pitchers to be able to do what we've seen them do over the last 15 days, which is four no-hitters.
I mean, you look at the averages of baseball, too. I mean, just the average of Major League Baseball, period, it's bad.
Isn't the Major League Baseball average like 220 or something?
Yep.
230?
It's terrible.
It's awful. I mean, the amount of strikeouts just keep going up and up and up.
I'm looking at the box scores from last night. Colorado, two hits against Joe Musgrove and a bullpen. They had two hits. I mean, it's constant. It's every single game that you get one of these dynamic performances.
Yeah, the thing that baseball struggles with, too, is, we kind of touched on, you know, the three-point shot in basketball. The beauty of basketball, though, is the best players have the ball in their hands for the majority of the game. They play most of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, baseball struggles from that because, I mean, there's less reliance on the starting pitcher. So, I mean, you're lucky going into some of these games. You get, you know, maybe if you're lucky, six innings from your favorite starting pitcher. Then you're going into the bullpen, and it's a cavalcade of different guys coming out of the bullpen. And your favorite hitter's going to, you know, what, four at bats?
Did you get the toilet paper that has, like, the words of the day on it or something?
Yeah, outstanding word usage.
Cavalcade.
Oh, you like that one?
That's outstanding.
Yeah, greatly.
I'm tapping into the inner Harvard, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, we got ipso facto thrown in here. cavalcade throw in here. What else you might come with later?
Who knows? You never know.
Who knows is right. You have a strong vocabulary.
By the way, T-shirt, just checked it out during the last break. It does. Yeah. It says DCR 98.7 on the sleeve. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah,
what color is the T-shirt?
Black.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, black with white writing. It's nice.
Your dad did well.
He did real well. We might have to, this may be his new, doing my papers, not so good. This could be his next.
Doing the show T-shirt.
So let me see this.
Show your merch.
I can't believe that you asked your dad to cheat for you.
It wasn't cheating. I asked him. He said, I said, hey, I got this paper. He's like, you want me to help out? I was like, yeah, I mean, it would be nice.
Dave, at Harvard, they teach you to delegate responsibility, and that's
yes.
all that Rico was doing.
Hang on.
Manage your time.
I said your dad cheated for you. He said, it wasn't cheating. He said, I'll do your paper. How is this not cheating?
If he gets a D, is it really cheating?
Yes.
No.
You just you cheated poorly is what you did.
No, he cheated poorly. It was his suggestion. I took it's his dad. It's your dad. He suggested. I'll say, okay, let's do it.
What a horrendous avenue of cheating, by the way.
No, this wasn't even the worst case. I'll tell you the worst one. It happened when I was in. Who?
How much cheating have you done, by the
way? This is
it's assistance. It's not cheating. It's assistance.
Yeah, it's assistance. So it's like spotting me. Yeah. The worst one, though. I'll tell you the worst one is if you asked me to draw you something, you would be. It's embarrassing. Like artistically, I am the worst you've ever seen.
Huh?
Yeah, but I had art class, and I had to do this. I had to do this. This art project where I had to use, it was, I don't know if it was charcoal or like a pencil drawing or whatever it was. And my dad's a really good artist. And I said, Dad, there's no way I'm going to be terrible at this. He goes, don't worry, I'll take care of it.
Uh-huh.
He does such a beautiful.
What, did you win like an award or something?
Dave, they asked me if I would show it at the art fair.
All right,
well,
you could
display it. No, and then that, but I had to be at the art fair and like explain like what went into me creating this masterpiece.
You did too well.
What
so,
were your
so
emotions?
What happened? Did you display it? Did you go?
Well, I had no choice. If I said no, they would have known I was cheating. So I'm sitting up there I'm like that. What did you tell me? What went into this for you? I'm just repeating what he told me.
What did you feel
yes.
that led you to using these colors?
What was the inspiration?
You know, I shouldn't give you a hard time. I had a near cheating scandal back in the day.
Scandal.
Yeah.
Well, scandal, you say.
Oh, look at what has happened. I'm a senior in high school, and you had to do a full internship. And I didn't see that on my horizon. So I asked my sister-in-law, who worked at the Lexington School for the Deaf. I said, do me a favor. On Lexington School for the Deaf letterhead, could you write me a note that says, you know, Dave performed a full internship here and did a great job? She said, sure. So I handed that in, and the teacher did not believe it. And of course, I get on the defensive. I'm like, how dare you question me? I said, how dare you
question me? You're a cheater! You're a cheater!
And he said, I'm going to call this woman, and I don't think you did it. I said, you know what? I don't think you will. I don't believe you call. He called. She defended me all the way, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, but you slighted. Now you're slighting the deaf community.
Not slighting anybody.
No, I don't think he's slighting. I don't think he's slighting the deaf community, but he's getting somebody else involved. I don't know that. You know, I mean, somebody that he was actively getting somebody else involved.
I didn't see putting together like 40 hours every couple weeks when I was.
No, I hear you on that, Dave. I get what you're saying, but I'm just saying, like, to have your teacher, go out of her way to try to confirm. Whether or not you did this internship.
Life is so good.
No, they
were convinced that I was cheating. And you know what the amazing thing is? I challenged them to call, almost thinking I wasn't cheating. How dare you challenge me? There's no way I would do that.
But you didn't do the internship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at that point, that's a problem. Like, if you tell yourself the lie so many times that you believe it's true.
I believed it was true. I was like, go ahead, call. I don't think you'll call. She's like, I will call. I'm like, go ahead, have at it. I don't think you will. And I absolutely did this full internship. They called, confirmation, and away we go.
Well, you should have done
Jerry,
it.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
That's right.
But I still don't feel like that's cheating. I don't know why.
You don't feel like that's cheating?
No, he cheated the people at the school with his thing. He didn't spend the time
he didn't spend the time that he said he spent with them.
No,
I don't think he cheated the assignment, though.
You know what would be diabolical? Is if that when you went back to challenge, like when they said, no, we don't think you did it, you challenged them, you didn't see, you signed it. You didn't even say it.
Yeah. I can't sign.
Like, well, but I'm saying you had learned. Like, that's how devious you were that you learned.
Yeah. Or I mean, I could have assumed they didn't know sign language and just signed something, and they would have been like, wow.
Wow, he's right.
He gets it.
I'm not going to waste my time with a call.
That's right.
Yeah.
When in actuality, I was like, can I have a burger, please?
Right. When you have no idea what you're saying.
No, absolutely no idea. But that was a good internship. I'm glad I did it. Dino in the Bronx. Dino, here next up on 98.7 ESPN.
What's up, guys? Geez, I almost forgot. So the Corey Kluber no-hitter, I would take it with a grain of salt because of everything that's been going on recently. But here's my question. If Kershaw or Shane Bieber or one of these guys goes up, or Jack Flaherty goes up and throws a no-hitter, now what? Because those guys are really good, you know? Does that still take away from everything that's happening?
No, I think the fear is that, I mean, for a guy like Clayton Kershaw, the fear would be that it would take away from an achievement like that. Because it should, I mean, it's something that a lot of people aren't capable of doing. Like, they'll be the guy that just all of a sudden has one of those nights. See, I don't think Kluber was one of those nights. I mean, Kluber has been. I mean,
he was great.
He's been awesome. Trending in that direction, yeah.
And Corey Kluber has had a great career.
Yes.
When Wade Miley does it, when you know, Spencer Turnbull does it, when the same teams get no-hit multiple times, I think it loses some of the appeal.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. I mean, Clayton Kershaw agrees with you. We're talking about, I mean, in you know, the modern day of baseball, the most no-hitters in a season is seven.
And we have six.
Well, we have six. Yeah, we have six, 9 innings. We have, I mean, Madison Bumgarner threw one in seven, which is
true.
I mean, it was a complete game.
And we're not through the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, how many do you think we have? What would you guess right now? How many no-hitters do you think we get this season? I'm going to say 10.
I would set the number.
A snail's pace down the stretch here.
No, I mean, if you were setting the number, I would set it. I would probably set the over-under at 10.
And yeah.
I would consider even.
I think it'll end up being in the low teens, like 13.
Oh my God, that's too much.
It is too much, Dave. But I mean, I don't see this changing. Hitters aren't going to change their approach. They're still going to try to hit home runs, which means that pitchers can set those guys up, and you're going to get a lot of strikeouts. You're going to get a lot of flyouts. That's what it is.
It may be even worse if you think about it. It may even get worse, right? Like if you know going into a game that it's going to be hard, you're going to be hard pressed for your lineup to string together hits.
Everybody's swinging for the fence.
Everyone, the only way you're going to score runs is hitting home runs.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Who's going to throw the no-hitter tonight? I pulled up the starting pitchers. You want me to run through them and you'll pick your no-hitter for tonight, Rick?
Could you imagine if we had three no-hitters in 3 days?
Stop it. Stop
it.
It'd be making a mockery of baseball.
All right. 12:35, Giants-Reds, Cueto and Mail are your starting pitchers.
Okay, keep going.
12:35. Yeah, I'll run through and then you'll pick. And Chris, you can pick as well, and I will. Rich Hill and I think it's Dean Kramer on the Orioles. That's a 12:35 start. Domingo Herman against Dunning at 2:05. Joe Ross and Trevor Williams at 2:20. Garcia and Irvin, Astros A's, 3:37. Somebody by the name of Thorpe goes up against, I guess it's Alex Cobb as the Twins play the Angels. Berrios, he's a good pitcher, against Canning in the second game. I got confused there, of the Twins Angels. Alcantara and Velasquez, Marlins Phillies. Crow and Smiley, Pirates Braves. Nick Pavetta and our old friend Steven Matz, Red Sox and the Blue Jays. And the Diamondbacks, Dodgers. Dodgers have not yet announced their starting pitcher. Diamondbacks will go with Kelly. I think it's Merrill Kelly, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Drew Smiley tonight, throws a no-hitter.
Interesting. I was going to go with Pirates. Undecided.
I'm going Rich Hill. No
Rich
hitting the O's.
40-year-old Rich Hill.
Yes. No hit the O's. Why not?
Hey, where are you going?
Oh, this is a tough call, David.
I'll tell you what, if one of our guys throws like if the team throws a combined two-hitter, we will make mention of this tomorrow.
I'm going to go with...
Who are you deciding between?
I was going to go undecided with the Dodgers.
You can't go with an undecided.
What?
But I decided against that.
You decided against the undecided. Yeah.
I'm going to go with... I'll take Alex Cobb.
Alex Cobb.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Alex Cobb no hits the Twins today?
With Alex Cobb.
Be amazing.
God, that would be just brutal. Absolutely.
How would
brutal.
You feel as Mets fans if Steven Matz no hits the Red Sox?
He's 5-2. I already feel bad about it. How amazing is it that teams can't help but throw no-hitters, and the Mets in their history have one, which many people even consider to be a Fugazi no-hitter?
Don't buy into that, though. It was a no-hitter. Stop.
I don't buy into that at all. I'm just saying the Mets have been around since 1962 and have one no-hitter.
Yeah, but we got the best pitcher in baseball.
You're correct.
Hang your hat on that.
I'll hang my hat right on that. Let's go to Will in the car. Will, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. I heard you mention before about, you know, hitting the ball the other way. It's not so much that they can't. I just think that they refuse to. The way to hit is to hit from foul pole to foul pole. If you watch any of the games, whether it's the Mets or the Yankees, they're much better offensively when they hit the ball from foul pole to foul pole. Yesterday on the YES Network, they did a 5-minute segment on staying inside the baseball, which gets you to hit the ball properly. When you're taught to accept the strikeout and it's a home run or a walk, that is such the polar opposite of how to teach hitting. These guys are big and strong enough to be able to hit the ball out of the park to all fields with the exception of a couple of guys. I don't understand why they can't hit the ball properly. And the reason is that they're not taught that way. That's my thoughts on that. Paul O'Neill speaks about it all the time, and it's from his studio, a basement studio at 21 on the games with Kay. Hit the ball where it's pitched. It's something that.
Yeah, but Will, that's how I was taught to hit. I'm sure that's how Dave was taught to hit and Chris was taught to hit. That's not how they're teaching people to hit now.
It's awful.
I mean, they put you up on a monitor.
The game of baseball.
Well, no, I mean they put you up on a monitor and you're working on your launch angle. What gives you the best opportunity to hit the ball get the ball in the air and hit home runs? And the pitches have adjusted, and the hitters haven't yet.
Listen, I can even see it up until two strikes. But when you have two strikes on you and you're still swinging for the fences and your team needs a hit in a big moment, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, but you still have to make contact with the baseball. I mean, that's really what we're struggling with right now is actually contacting
the
baseball.
They can't touch the ball. No, it's incredible. It really is. Watching a Major League Baseball game now can be really disheartening. Let's go to Scotty in the Bronx. Good morning, Scott. You're on 98.7.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say that I don't believe the no-hitter is devalued just because a couple of not-so-great pitchers have thrown them, and especially for Yankee pitchers, because the last three times Yankee pitchers threw no-hitters, we ended up world champions. Dwight Gooden in 96,
yep.
David Wells in 98, David Cone in 99. And Buns, not-so-great pitchers have been throwing no-hitters in perfect games forever, like Len Barker.
Yeah, Len Barker threw a perfect game for the Indians, but it didn't happen 8 times in the course of a season. And that was a perfect game. Those are still extremely rare. Scott, we've had 6 no-hitters in the first 6 weeks of the Major League season.
It's the frequency of it, and it's also it's the fact that offensively, baseball's in a bad spot right now. Like,
teams
just can't hit.
It's not just that you get so many no-hitters. I ran through it earlier. You get a 2-hitter last night. You get a 3-hitter last night. You get a no-hitter last night. Like, how many games do you have to watch where you get no hits in baseball?
A lot. I mean, at this point, I mean, you're not seeing the offense that you need to see. And then on top of that, I mean, even the Mets game last night, combined, there's 23 strikeouts last night in that game.
Terrible loss for the Mets last night, too.
Awful loss.
They should have won. Aaron Loop was brutal.
He wasn't good.
And you knew Acuna was just going to walk it off, right? You knew it in that moment.
The first pitch, though, you couldn't wait.
Nope.
You knew it was going to happen, though, Rico. You knew it.
He's got full body armor, that guy, too, huh?
Yeah, and that was his first hit of the series, too.
Yeah, he unloaded on that. Good time to get your first hit of the series. All right, let's switch topics a little bit here. Adam Schefter with the tweet. Tim Tebow signed his contract this morning with the Jaguars, per source. He'll be out on the field today for the team's offseason program as he sets out to compete for a roster spot at tight end. Chris, this is nonsense. Why is Tim Tebow still toying around in the NFL?
I don't get it, Dave. And I was in a great mood this morning because I had a great sports night last night. My Yankees won. Kluber pitches a no-hitter. And then LeBron James, minute to go, puts the dagger in it and the nail in the coffin for the Golden State Warriors to get the Lakers into the playoffs. And then I see this news from Adam Schefter a few minutes ago. They're making a mockery of the NFL. And I don't understand why Urban Meyer is signing a guy that hadn't been on an NFL field in 6 years and hadn't played competitively in 8 years. And then to couple that with the fact that the guy's going to have to go through a position change in order to potentially add value to the team. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. I just feel like this is another misstep by Urban Meyer after what happened with Chris Doyle, an Iowa strength coach, and him trying to hire him as his director of sports performance. Now you're going to go out and sign a guy in Tim Tebow that we don't know whether or not he can play football anymore, let alone come in and have an opportunity to contribute as a tight end on this team. Like, it undermines the credibility of a head coach that a lot of players are kind of looking at sideways anyway, because it remains to be seen whether or not him coming from the college ranks can have success in the NFL. So I think it's a ridiculous signing. I just don't think the juice is worth the squeeze with adding Tebow.
Yeah, I mean, do you sign him, though, too? I mean, do you put him through signing him to end up cutting him?
I don't know if you can do that, though, Rico, because otherwise, why do you go through all of the trouble, all the criticism?
But that's what I mean. I mean, if you're going to go through all this, you're going to take all the slings and arrows of this thing. And, I mean, Tim Tebow's your – I mean, you look at him as a son. Would you put him through this to all of a sudden now cut him?
But if he's awful, you have to, no?
Yeah, but if you do,
why would you expect anything different at this point?
But here's the thing, though, Dave, and to Rick's point, if you do cut him, then there are going to be players in that locker room that are wondering, why the hell did we carry this guy for the entire offseason and allow him to take up a roster spot?
I'm sure
when it could have been somebody else as a developmental prospect. Why would we do that?
It makes no sense, because he looks at him as the son, right? That I don't know if he never had, but as an, either the son he never had or an additional son, that he loves this guy and he will do whatever it takes to help him in his career.
Yeah, but it's not about helping Tebow.
I agree
with you. It's about being able to build your program. Yeah, and I get that most new head coaches want guys in the locker room that can be mouthpieces for them, somebody that can be an ambassador for your agenda. I get that. But that guy, in order to be an effective leader, has to be able to play in the NFL. Like in college, you can have those guys that don't get a lot of burn, just special teams guys that, you know, okay, you know, we listen to this guy because he's an alpha, right? He has those qualities, those characteristics that push him to the forefront of your locker room from a leadership standpoint. But in the NFL, guys ain't listening to people that can't contribute to the team. And that's the question that I got with Tim Tebow. I don't think he's going to add any value as a player on the field. And if
all
he can't play,
is a distraction.
But that's what
all
I'm saying.
He is.
But if he can't play, Dave, then how can he help your team?
He can't. All he is a distraction. I've heard so many stories, and Rick, I'm sure you've heard more than me because you have these ties to the Jets, that it was a disaster when he was here with the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't what they were looking for. I mean, you asked Willie Colon about it. I mean, it was
a disaster.
It was a disaster. And I just don't understand. Like, I mean, why bring – you had the first overall pick. Right? I mean, you got Trevor Lawrence. Why all of a sudden saddle yourself with this kind of, you know, negative conversation or this kind of distraction?
Here's Urban Meyer from a week ago on Tim Tebow.
They come in and they said, wow, you know, this guy's ball skills. He's a great athlete. He looks like he's 18 years old, not 20, whatever he is, 33. And I said, guys, you don't understand. Now, this guy is, you know, he's the most competitive maniac you're ever going to talk to. And let's give it a shot.
Yeah, he was so much of a competitor, Dave, that when they asked him in his first stint in the NFL to change positions and try tight end, he decided he was going to go play minor league baseball.
That's right.
He's that much of a competitor.
Yep.
He's that kind of competitor.
That's right. That was from the Collinsworth podcast.
The Patriots tried it with him, too, and it didn't work.
Did you see the clip of when he was a Jet and they threw
him
the ball?
Hit him on the side of the helmet.
The ball hit him
in the side. Remember that game?
That's a highlight you see all the time. It's embarrassing.
That's the gong show, Dave, right there. Tim Tebow being a position player in the NFL.
That is the
gong show.
You know what? We said Jets, and Ira in Staten Island got the call on the bat phone. Ira, good morning. You're on 98.7.
Yeah, good morning, fellas. You know, I saw firsthand Tim Tebow up in Cortland. And listen, with all due respect to the guy, tremendous collegiate player, leadership, motivation, but he's not going to contribute in the NFL. I mean, and he get a hold of roster slot because maybe he could play special teams, but at his age, he's not going to be able to do that. You know, the bottom line is I saw him drop pass after pass after pass when the Jets experimented. When you have Tannenbaum on, you ask him next time. He can't convert to an NFL player. And like I said, it's a nice story. It may sell tickets. But quite frankly, he doesn't deserve to be on a 53-man roster. He just doesn't.
He certainly doesn't. I would ask both of you guys, and thanks for the call, Ira. What is nice about the story at this point?
What is nice about the story?
What is nice about
him going back to his hometown? and being a part of that NFL team? Like, that would be the only thing that you would say, okay.
If he was competent, sure.
That's the good part of the story. Like, him being affiliated with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But my thing is this. Like, if you want Tebow's intangibles as a part of you trying to develop your new program, then why not just hire him as a coach or a consultant? Why do you have to put him on the active roster? That doesn't make any sense to me. And then, you know, I was on First Take with Max Kellerman last week, and Max was saying, well, this is going to be a distraction to keep people from focusing on Trevor Lawrence. I was like, no it ain't. Trevor Lawrence is the number one overall pick. People are going to be paying attention to Trevor Lawrence. Like, he's the most anticipated quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck or John Elway. Like, so them signing Tim Tebow is not going to take eyeballs off of Trevor Lawrence. But what it will do is bring a lot of eyeballs from guys in your locker room on their head coach, and not in a good way. And if your head coach loses your locker room, then what does that do in terms of the development of Trevor Lawrence?
I've already got questions on Urban Meyer. He's going to move Travis Etienne to wide receiver?
Hybrid. Yeah, hybrid.
Come on.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is this, though, Dave. Like when your head coach makes a move like this, like, it undermines his credibility in the eyes of all the other veteran players in that locker room.
Right. And he's never done it before, Chris.
And he's never done it. And, I mean, listen, we've seen successful college coaches come to the NFL and fail. Chip Kelly failed. Nick Saban failed. Like, Steve Spurrier failed miserably. Like, it's not like we haven't seen college coaches that were really good fail at the NFL level. It's a different animal. And so guys in the NFL are already looking at it and saying, you know, I don't know if this guy is going to put me in positions to have success. But especially on the heels of the strength coach move and now the Tebow signing, like, you could lose your locker room. And the thing that I worry about is, where does that put Trevor Lawrence? Because if the guys check out and they don't play for your head coach, how is that going to help him this fall when he's trying to go out there and make plays?
It won't.
And he's out there by himself because guys don't believe in a head coach.
Yeah, it certainly won't. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressive.com. Let's get to some of the calls. Let's go to Paulie in White Plains. Paul, you're next up on 98.7.
How we doing, boys?
What's going on, Paulie?
Rick, you got to be quicker when the guys say, how you doing? This is your baby.
I didn't know he wanted me to respond. Sometimes they say, how you doing, and they get to their point. I didn't know.
He's looking for a response.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I should have got right to the point. No small talk, right to the point. So I understand the Tebow thing, but this is my thing about it. I'm disagreeing with you guys. The will and the leadership that he brings, and he's going to teach the other players just by doing it, he has less skill set, I think, than an NFL player at this point in his life. I know he's a great athlete. But he's bringing, like, he's going to show guys, like, wow, how is this guy performing on the field better than I am? And I'm a bigger dude.
Yeah, but Paul, that's assuming that's going
to
happen, which no one expects to happen. But it almost, I mean.
No, I think that's going to happen. Guys, nobody gives him, like, I know I'm going back far now. And again,
if Tim Tebow is on the field and he outperforms your tight ends, you got other problems.
You got bigger problems.
You got bigger problems.
You got to fire everybody in the front office.
Or he's just remarkable.
But not only does it undermine Urban Meyer's credibility, if the thought was we bring him in and at some point we want to transition him into a coach, if you go on the field now and the guys on your team that you could eventually coach see that you stink, and now you're going to turn around and try to tell them what to do?
Why are they going to listen to you?
There's no chance.
No shot.
No. Let's go to Ron in Chester. Ron, you're next up on 98.7.
Gentlemen, I appreciate the time. The thing I don't get about the Tebow situation, why is it such a big deal in that here's a good guy, whatever the motivation is of Urban Meyer, whatever it is, here's a good guy, a great guy, he does bring leadership. So we're complaining about a good guy getting a chance versus bad guys like Antonio Brown, who gets seven chances to come back and forth. Bad guy, yet we don't make any issues or complaints with that bad, giving credence basically to the wording of that the talent is the biggest deodorant in the NFL.
But it is.
And nobody really cares.
Ron, of course it is. The talent is always going to be the biggest deodorant. And I don't think that these two stories have anything to do with each other. Antonio Brown is a completely separate entity than Tim Tebow, who does not deserve to be with the Jaguars.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. And everybody's saying, oh, he's a good guy and he's a leader. Well, listen, there are plenty of good guys that don't get opportunities to play in the NFL. There are a lot of them. There are a lot of good college football players that are high-character players. But guess what? They don't get a chance in the NFL. You know why, Dave? Because they can't play.
Right.
And if you can't play, then you can't lead. It's that simple. Everybody's talking about all of these leadership intangibles that Tim Tebow has. Well, as a player that's taken up a roster spot, if you can't go out there on the field and help to contribute, if you can't help us win, if you can't help me put money in my pocket and food on my family's table, I'm not going to want to hear nothing you got to say. You can't lead grown men if you can't help them. That's the position that Urban Meyer is putting Tim Tebow in right now. What he doesn't realize is that he's jeopardizing his credibility in the eyes of all those players in that locker room.
And is he likable? Yeah, he's likable. But is he competent?
Yeah, but time out. But time out. I mean, how you lead in college is different than how you lead grown men in the NFL.
Exactly.
Of course. I mean, you watched. I mean, how did Jameis Winston look? And he was a really good leader. From
he
everything
looked like
I was
a
told,
clown.
Like a clown, eating W's and everything else.
I love that.
No, but the other thing, too, is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Does Tim Tebow, you saw it here with the Jets. When Tim Tebow shows up, does the circus follow?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't think there's how many guys in that locker room right now?
I mean, 90.
Okay, 90 guys in that locker room, right, that are looking at this like, you mean to tell me that this guy hasn't played football in this many years, he all of a sudden is going to change positions, he'll be 34, brings a circus with him, he can get a contract, but the other guy who you told me brought a circus with him, but we can't get him a job, Colin Kaepernick, you don't think guys are thinking about that? Colin Kaepernick
sure
can't
are.
Get a shot, but this guy
you've
can?
You've seen the occasional tweets about this. I think I remember this happening. Correct me if I'm wrong, that when Tebow signed with the Jets, the local news, not a sports show, the local news cut to his plane landing at the local airport. That's how big of a circus he brings to the table.
He was doing press conferences, Dave. How many backup quarterbacks you see do press conferences?
None.
None, right?
None. Let's go to Paulie and Wantaugh. Paulie, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. What's up? Thanks for taking the call. Listen, I think that you guys are being too hard, too quick on this topic. And if Tebow can't play come September, he's not going to be on the roster. But if you look at the Jaguars depth chart, Jaguars tight end, if he competes in training camp and is the third or second best tight end, what is wrong with him taking the roster spot at that point, getting targets a game, maybe doing a little wildcat?
Paulie,
what's wrong
Paulie,
with that if he earns his way?
Paulie, time out. I mean, if you're in a situation where you sign Tim Tebow at 33, soon to be 34, has never played the position, all of a sudden now wants to change positions, and he's the second best tight end.
You got a big problems.
You got to find your
tight end fired. Dink.
Big problems.
Where have you gone to get your tight ends? Quickly, KJZ just coming up in a couple of moments. A lot of Nets conversation, so you're certainly going to want to stick by for that. Steve Nash was on the K Show yesterday, and they'll really do a deep dive into the Nets and their series against the Celtics and all things NBA. But now, Santi, it's your time to shine.
Today's three stars of DCR. Number three.
I apologize for stepping on you there, Dave. It's kind of been a theme today with step-ons and messing up. I think the star, as far as that goes today, was the did it happen in Florida.
This is a 20-year-old Detroit woman.
And again, I defend Rick on this particular thing because I understand how it can happen, and it has happened to me, and I think you're a little harsh, and, you know, we should just move on from it.
Why can't we just admit that Rick messed up his first D-Hit story?
We can.
Okay.
And we acknowledge the reasons why, and we move on.
Instead of being DiPietro apologist, let's just say he messed up. That's fine. No one's perfect.
All right. Love you, Sandy.
Number two.
Number two, we were just talking about it. Urban Meyer bringing Tim Tebow, bringing the heat. And the caller just said, oh, he's a good guy. He deserves the chance. I mean, to that, RJ and I were just talking in here saying, you know, we're good guys. We think we're good guys. Can we just try out to be gunners for a play on a, you know, in training camp? We can just get wrecked, you know? To
quote, can I ask a question?
I'll quote from Michael K on this one.
I'm a good guy. Mom, I'm a better guy than you.
Why can't it be any good guy?
How is Urban Meyer for making one of the most preposterous decisions we've seen? How is that star worthy?
Because it just spurred this conversation over the last 15 minutes. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Oh, so you could be a fool, but as long as you're getting conversation off of that, now you're relevant.
Haven't we talked about this already?
Okay, all right.
I wish I had friends like Tim Tebow has friends.
Telling you, right? Oh, man.
No, and before I move on from that,
you want to play baseball? No big deal. You want to come back, play football? No big deal.
He is failing, isn't he?
I'm reminded of when Omar Minaya said that we didn't sign Tim Tebow to sell T-shirts in Tennessee or what have you. Meanwhile, Tim Tebow became the number one selling jersey on MLB.com at a time for the Mets, but, you know, that's another thing entirely.
number one.
Number one, we go back to the no-hitter last night from Kluber. The guy that I appreciate the most is actually Kyle Higashioka for being just straight-up honest about how calm he was.
Probably the wrong person to ask because I was not calm at all. I was doing a little hyperventilating on the bench between the eighth and ninth inning. So luckily Corey didn't notice.
Well done by Santi with those three stars. We'll do it again on our 100th show tomorrow. It's the Friday, and it's the Rule 76.
No excuses, play like a champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, and...
everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left!
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.